usually they garbled it up with a complete misconstruction of the book of Daniel and said that Daniel's 70th week, comprising 7 years, would be the end of the age, and so they said that everything in the book of Daniel would happen. Some of them said during the last 7 years before the return of Christ, and some said only half of it, the last 3.5 years of it, would be before the return of Christ. So our Jesuit, Lacunza, writing in Spanish, wrote this, "The Coming of Messiah in Glory and Majesty," following the futurist theory. You can't blame the Catholic Church for doing anything that the book of Revelation says, because it hasn't happened yet. There haven't been all these martyrs. All this is going to come later. Now, he had to be doubly smart. If he wrote his book so completely Catholic that the church would accept it and make it one of their doctrinal books, then the Protestants wouldn't take it. He had to differ enough from accepted Catholic theory that the church would officially ban it. See, the Catholic Church for many, many centuries has maintained a list, the Index Expurgatorius, a list of books which all Catholics are forbidden to read. Now, if he could get his book put on the Index Expurgatorius so that no Catholic taint appeared to be attached to it. But just here was a chance for these Protestant Christians to find out their religion from a Jew. That's the sort of thing they'd swallow. Now, you've got to give the old boy credit for cleverness. Not for good morals, but for cleverness. Now, the Catholic Church had always put out the doctrine that this so-called the Antichrist was one single individual who was going to do all these things. If it ever admitted that there was an organization that was going to do all these evil things, then everybody would say, well, yes, there is an organization which has already done all these evil things, and it's the Catholic Church. So, they had to maintain that this was just the work of one man, everything in the 13th chapter of Revelation. So, Lacunza, in his book, while not coming out and saying so, speculated upon the possibility that this extent of tribulation was so great that it would have to be the work of an organization rather than just one man. Might it not be that some one man would succeed in getting control of the Catholic Church and making himself Pope and use the Catholic Church to do this? Not that he had yet, but you know, in the future, just before the coming of Christ. Well, of course, when he put that in it, that, of course, got him the results he wanted. It was put on the Index Expurgatorius. Well, the first printing of his book in the Spanish language was printed in Spain in 1812, speedily suppressed in Spain, and placed everywhere on the church's Index Expurgatorius. Then, in 1816, a complete four-volume edition of Rabbi Ben Ezra's works was printed by a diplomatic agent of Argentina. Now, Lacunza was Chilean, but of course the church practically governs, and then definitely did so, all of South America. So this coming out of Argentina rather than Chile made no particular difference. So a complete edition of it was printed in London by this diplomatic agent of Argentina. And he saw that a copy of it was placed in the library of the Archbishop of Canterbury. Now that, like the British Library, was not a private library, but was for the use of the entire church, and where all church scholars would have access to it. 10 years later, in 1826, a Dr. Maitland, who was the librarian of the Library of the Archbishop of Canterbury, began issuing a series of pamphlets expressing this Jesuit futuristic interpretation of the Book of Revelation. Now, he started with mistranslating the Book of Revelation itself. Now, you'll remember a number of the Old Testament prophets have spoken of the great day of the Lord Almighty, the day of God's vengeance. Now, what John says here, Revelation 1, verse 10, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. Now, you'll remember from the book of Acts, another mention in the New Testament, that they called Sunday the Lord's day, because that was the day on which Jesus Christ was resurrected. And what this says here in the Greek is, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day, not the great day of the Lord Almighty. But Maitland mistranslated it. He said, now you see, John was saying that he didn't get his vision until the great and terrible day of the Lord Almighty, the day of God's vengeance. And so therefore, since he didn't see it until then, and since it was future prophecy as it was given to him, it shows that it all has to happen just at the time of God's final judgment and vengeance. That was worthy of a Jesuit, even though Maitland was a professed Protestant. And in his series of pamphlets, he used the arguments of this Rabbi Ben Ezra all the way down the line. Now, if you want to sweeten the new pill so it'll be swallowed, put in something that appeals to the timid. Yeah, there are going to be terrible things at the end of the age, but not for you. You will be taken out of it. You and your denomination will all be whisked away, and it's only the other denominations that have to go through the tribulation. So, Lacunza had brains enough to put in that. Now that, of course, required again a complete misquotation of the scriptures, because you'll find nothing in the Bible to support it. Nearly the same time, over in Ireland, which of course was a Catholic Church hotbed, stronghold, a Mr. Berg published a book on the future Antichrist. Then, 7 years later, a great flood of pamphlets began to appear, most of them anonymous, many of them written by people who were professors or students at Oxford University, and it was called the Oxford Movement, or the Tractarian Movement, because these little pamphlets or tracts were used. And in fact, it came swiftly to be called the Anglo-Catholic movement. The sum and substance of all this was, we have been wrongfully accusing the Catholic Church of all the millions of Protestants that we know they have caused to be murdered, because it's authentic history. But we've been wrongfully accusing the Church of that, because the Book of Revelation is all future. And therefore, the thing the Bible talks about is some more millions who were going to be murdered sometime later, and the Catholic Church is just our fellow Christian church with which we should be very friendly, because the murders of the past and the recent present shouldn't be held against them. The last person burned at the stake for heresy was martyred in the 1860s in Italy. So if you think this is ancient history, it's not. Well, there began this strong movement. This thing spread like wildfire through some of the Protestant church congregations in England, with a strong movement to go back into the Catholic Church, because they said the Protestant churches split off wrongfully from the Catholic Church, which is the true church, and remains so despite all the immorality of the popes and clergy, despite the sale of indulgences, despite the murder of millions of Protestants. So let's go back. 1827 to 1833 began a new church movement in England. Edward Irving followed what he founded, what was first called the Irvingite Church after himself, and later became called the Catholic Apostolic Church. Now, Irving published an English translation of Lecuenthe's writings, still under the name of Rabbi Ben Ezra, but Irving knew that it was Lecuenthe, the Jesuit, who had written it. So here was deliberate deception. He wasn't just one of the deceived. Irving furthermore declared that he heard a voice from heaven commanding him to preach a doctrine that Christ was not going to come just once more, a second coming. It was to be a second and a third coming, that the second coming was to be secret, unknown to anybody, at which time he would rapture or take away the saints. And this would be 7 years before his third coming, when he would come in power to rule the earth. So there you find the origin of this secret rapture of the saints. Now, the church from the beginning had known, of course, the verses which are misquoted and misconstrued to try to support this. 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 15 to 17. For this we say by the word of the Lord, that we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Lord shall not precede them which are asleep. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God. Does that sound like a secret coming? And the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. Now, the church for 18 centuries had never thought that meant a secret coming that nobody knew about. Then also, with Luke 17, verses 30 to 36, even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. Note that, not hidden, so you can't see him, is revealed. In that day, he which shall be upon the house top and his stuff in the house, let him not come down to take it away. And he that is in the field, let him likewise not return back. Well, that was instructions given to them when the Roman armies gathered to besiege Jerusalem in 68 A.D. Don't dawdle around. Get out while you still can. I tell you that in that night there shall be two men in one bed. The one shall be taken and the other shall be left. two women shall be grinding together, the one shall be taken and the other left. Two men shall be in the field, the one shall be taken and the other left. Well, it's going to be a selective process when God picks his saints. But there is nowhere here any suggestion that this is to be a secret process. Now, in that very same chapter of Luke, here's what Christ says. For as the lightning that lighteneth out of the one part under heaven shineth unto the other part under heaven, so shall the Son of Man be in his day. Anything about that you can overlook? No. Clear enough. Well, as I say, the movement swept England like a prairie fire. Some Presbyterian congregations and some Anglican even petitioned to be allowed to join the Catholic Church and were accepted into the Catholic Church. Of course, the difference between the Church of England and the Church of Rome has been slight and technical from the beginning and still is. Then the Brethren Church was started. It was first formed in Dublin, Ireland, by Edward Cronin, who had been brought up as a Roman Catholic. But he... he got some revelations that he was to start a new church. Now, the Catholic Church says that the word church means the whole body of the faithful. There's only one church, and the Catholic Church is it. If you were not a Catholic, therefore, you were beyond the possibility of salvation because you're not in the church. The fact that as the Apostle Paul came to see, there was both a visible, organized church and an invisible or unorganized church, they overlook. Well, so with this Brethren Church under Cronin. They held that the church makes up the whole body of the faithful. There's no salvation outside it. But only the Brethren Church constituted the true church. Now, it's been the rule generally with all denominations. They expect, and rightfully so, that they shall have some control over who shall be their members and what doctrine shall be preached. And even if I don't agree with their doctrines, I certainly recognize that they have a right to limit their own congregations to their doctrines, just as I claim the same right for anyone where I preside. But Cronin declared that membership in this Brethren Church automatically entitled them to participate in the activities, including the Lord's Supper, with any other denomination. They were entitled to walk in such numbers as to take over if need be. They didn't concede that any member of any other denomination had the right to go in and take part in the Lord's Supper in a Brethren Church. Their rules, other than membership, were rather flexible. They did have to meet every Sunday for the breaking of bread. And if you missed that, you were out. There was one congregation of them which had to rent a particular hall for their meetings. And by some mix-up, they failed to get the key to the hall for one Sunday, and they weren't able to get in that Sunday to break bread in their communion service. For this, they were excommunicated. But aside from that, each local assembly or congregation had pretty much the power to determine its own doctrines and to excommunicate any person or any other congregation that didn't agree with it. And that was very freely exercised. In fact, there's no other instance in history of any church in which there was so much excommunicating going on. In fact, even the founder, Edward Cronin, was finally excommunicated from the church he founded. But he had started them preaching this secret rapture, that Christ will come back unseen, unnoticed, and take away the members of his church, who are the only ones going to be saved anyway. One of the early leaders of the church was one J.N. Darby, a very active man. A motto of some of the Catholic monks had been, "Ignorance is the mother of devotion. Don't let your congregation learn too much." And that became Darby's motto. He discouraged, as thoroughly as he could, any reading of anything except the Bible and those tracts which he wrote explaining their doctrines. And he wrote a great number of them. Especially did he discourage reading any books on church history, which would have exploded his views as thoroughly as it would have exploded Catholicism. Well, as I say, it spread quite a bit. A number of churchmen who should have known better were taken in by it. Schofield, whose notes are in the Schofield edition of the King James Version of the Bible, was one of them taken in by it. And a number of other prominent churchmen of that period, although most of them later saw through it and repudiated it. The only thing they could hope to base it upon was the statement in Revelation 15, verse 15, where Christ says, "Behold, I come as a thief." And they say, "Well, he's warning you, he'll come upon you unnoticed, and you don't see the thief, and so therefore that means when he comes he'll be invisible." But Christ made it perfectly clear that that was not the meaning of it. Matthew 24, verses 42 to 44, and the same thing in Luke 12, verses 35 to 40. He said, "Watch, therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched, and would not have suffered his house to be broken into. Therefore be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh." Now, if the thief was invisible, and you could stand in front of him and look right through him and not see him, it wouldn't do you any good to watch, would it? In Revelation 3, verses 1 to 3, "And unto the angel of the church in Sardis write, Be watchful, and strengthen the things that remain that are ready to die. For I have not found thy works perfect before God. If therefore thou dost not watch, I will come upon thee as a thief, and thou shalt not know what hour I will come upon thee." Well, 2 Peter, "The day of the Lord shall come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up." Is that something you could fail to notice when it happens? 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 1 to 6. "But of the times and the seasons, brethren, ye have no need that I write unto you, for yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them, as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. But ye, brethren, are not in darkness, that that day should overtake you as a thief. Therefore let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober." So, this doctrine of the rapture, and especially the secret rapture, is based entirely upon a failure to read the Bible. Some of these one-verse Christians, there are even some of these denominations holding this view, who say that the secret rapture has already occurred. Well, the rapture is to take away, according to them, all those living who are among the saved. And therefore, if that's already happened, all the members of that church still alive here are among the unsaved, which is not much of an ad for the church, but I've heard it maintained. So when any of them try to sell you this idea of a rapture of the saints before the Great Tribulation, don't let them get away with it. Here's what Jesus Christ himself says, and it's in the 13th chapter of Mark, and you'll find the same thing in the 24th chapter of Matthew. But in those days, after that tribulation, note that, not before, not even in the midst of it, but in those days after that tribulation, the sun shall be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars of heaven shall fall, and the powers that are in heaven shall be shaken. Now that's one sentence. These things come after the tribulation. And then, this is still after now, and then shall they see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with power and great glory. So that is after the tribulation. Now go on to still the next sentence. And then, after he has made his appearance coming, which doesn't happen until after the tribulation, and then shall he send his angels and shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from the uttermost part of the earth to the uttermost part of heaven. Watch, therefore, for ye know not when the master of the house cometh. At even, or at midnight, or at the cock crowing, or in the morning, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping. And what I say unto you, I say unto all, watch. Then again in Matthew 24, verses 37, 39, and 42, but as the days of Noah were, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. Now was there a secret flood to carry away the ark with Noah and his family sometime before the flood came that drowned the rest of the people? You don't find that in the Bible. I have often wondered if it would be possible to find any fallacy directly contrary to the Bible that would not be taken up and preached by some nominally Christian sect. Certainly, most anything you can find that the Bible thoroughly refutes in language too clear for any mistake has been taken up and made a doctrine by some sect or denomination. Now they all have their little pamphlets to hand you in which they quote some four or five verses of the Bible or sometimes misquote them and say, you see, that proves we're right. But what I've been telling you all these years, I'll repeat again. You cannot find the entirety of the Bible's teaching on any one subject in any one place. You can't find it in the writings of any one prophet or apostle. You will find a portion of it there, and some other prophet or apostle writing 400 years earlier gives you some more of it And another one writing 200-odd years later gives you some more of it. And when you put them all together, you know what the Bible has to say on that subject, and you have a clear and accurate idea of it. At least if you use your Strong's Concordance to straighten out the places where the King James Version isn't clear. But never fall for any of these one-verse Christians. It isn't all in one verse or four or five verses, and if that's all they've got, they're wrong, at least in part, and you want to be entirely right. So don't expect to be taken out before the trouble starts. I'm not expecting that even for us, and I consider you people to be on the preferred list as far as anybody can be. You're going to be here through the tribulation. It's going to be rough and uncomfortable, but you've got God's promise that He will guard you and bring you through it. And after the tribulation is over, you will be caught up to meet the returning Christ, not before.